now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Lara Lanamy. On today's show, my wonderful friend Louise is coming in.
Speak, little one, the world is listening. We'll be talking all about the debut film.
And news extra. My
Terry's here with a load more info on your latest stories.
And all in today, right on Shout Out.
It's never the same when you're not here to do that, you know. Everyone else tries their best.
They do, but they're not quite Lara.
No, they're not quite Lara.
And I got a backing up singer today, with Terry. Thank you. I had my Whitney moment. You know, had that nice little backing track. How is everybody?
Almost singing in the rain, judging by you got caught, didn't you?
I was drowning in the rain. Drowning? Drowning in the rain. I was like a drowned rat. Well, I still look. You know, I'm still dry, but like it's deluge.
Yeah, it's been really on and off all day.
It's like nothing has dropped as quick into autumn than rain. Like rain every, and it's not even just light little sprinkle. It's like you're gonna get wet. Through to the bone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're absolutely
one of those. I'll just run to the shop quick and you come back soaked to your underpants.
Honestly, I see people running out in flip flops. I'm like, oh, you made a wrong decision today.
Now they're there, and I bet they're in shorts too, still pretending it's summer.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Just like trying to, like, no, let it go. Summer is over.
Quicker to dry.
So I'm glad I'm not the only one who has friends who hang on to summer until it's like -5,
literally
still wearing the shorts.
Bare nails. It's like glowing. It's like, honey, it's gone. It's fine, and fur coats come out. It's a whole different layering system, though. That's what I love.
It is.
In the brief moments that the sun came out today, though, it was like, it was hot, it was warm, so it's hard to know what to wear.
Honestly, welcome to Britain. We love
I've been here a while.
Hate to love it.
Been here a while.
Yeah.
There's one thing you're guaranteed about with the Brits, it's they will complain about the weather.
Oh, 100%. No, but at least it gives you something to talk about, though. Because, you know, because, like, I hate, like, you know, networking, and you're like, oh, the weather, though. And you know what I mean? And everyone's like, I know. And then there's always some kind of story.
It's an icebreaker, isn't it?
It's a very common one, isn't it?
It is. So, like, you know, it's bad weather, but at least I've always got something to
Hey, Louise,
about.
What's the weather like? Does it work? Is it an icebreaker? It is, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Andy, putting someone on the spot like that. Yeah, well, we'll talk to you later, Louise. But how's everyone? Did everyone survive the rain today? Anyone get a little bit wet?
Survived the rain,
Okay. You all look fairly dry, to be fair. So
definitely my hair for a few of my clients was sort of stuck to my face a bit. But
I have that problem. It's terrible.
All those hairs. When did they divorce you?
Well, I technically do still have it. I just shave it off.
Fair. I think I like this
male
look.
Things that happens.
It's giving
so
very.
I would not have. It was not my choice. I used to love my hair, and I used to love that having a shower and shampooing your hair. And
we need to do like pictures from the old days. Like we need to like.
You
do, like,
we should. We should get some. Yeah.
Come on.
I was thin once. You know, there's a reason I do radio and not TV.
Oh, Andy. I'd watch you any day of this week. Every day of the week.
You used to have like a flat top, slightly flat top.
Yeah, I used to kind of like have a flick at the front. But it depends how far back you go, because if you go back to secondary school, I had curtains. They were all the rage back then.
They were.
It was the in thing.
I need to see these pictures, and I need to see them soon. I also see one at I want to see all of us. What did we look like?
So what did you look like?
Gosh. Like,
was there anything you were really embarrassed of? Do you look at your photos?
I used to. So do you know there was a whole like sweet prune phase? I used to have these three little like plaits that I tried to sweep to the side because I didn't have the long sweeping hair, so it was very tragic. But I still live my like emo gothy kind of power against the like revolution kind of thing. Yeah, I still do that.
Don't know if you'll be quite there yet because you're couple of generations younger than me, but I am now at that point where you look back at your like your teenage photos and you're like, that was cool back then, that looks hideous now.
I'm sorry, have you seen any pictures from the early 2000s? Look at all the celebrities, look at the jelly shoot, like what were we doing?
Try shell suits.
Oh yeah.
You see the shell suit? They were a huge thing in the 90s. And they're awful.
But
I mean, and we used to smoke back then. If you got anywhere near one of those with a cigarette, they went up like a flame.
No, hear me out though. 60s, 70s, 80s and 50s also, but and 90s, all brilliant styles. There's distinctive styles. Early
2000s. I don't know. The 70s was brown
chaotic.
And yellow. And
yeah. But
the 70s flares, have their followers.
Thank you. But the flares, the shoes, the swag. Come on.
Swag.
The early 2000s, no one can save us.
In this TikTok age, it's all pouting, isn't it?
At least they have style now. Like back then, it's like
they all do it.
Fashion just skipped our generation, honestly. Like tutus. My friends used to wear tutus, bright lumen. Why was that a fashion statement?
No idea.
Like. Beyond.
Anyway, should we get some real world going songs? It's time to get a bit of news.
So,
we're changing things around a little bit because we've got news extra later. So we're going to have news first. So
we are ready.
Are you ready? Cool.
We're ready. This is Shoutout News. Welcome along. Abortion Rights UK headed up a coalition of pro-choice reproductive charities and organisations on the 31st of August to counter the annual anti-choice march in London, made up largely of highly conservative religious groups. The Socialist Worker newspaper said that around 400 people gathered to oppose the anti-choice protests. Fiona from West London was on the counter-protest for the third year in a row. She said, "I'm feeling positive that the numbers on their side have shrunk from last year, but it's clear we have to continue the fight for the right to abortion. It makes me sad and scared to be living in Britain where women are being jailed under a law from 1861, which is before we even had the right to vote."
American Atheists, which has long supported LGBTQIA people's right to self-determination, has new t-shirts for sale in sizes small to extra large, reading "Democracy, Not Theocracy." The t-shirts are a reminder that the United States was set up as a secular democracy and that the current group of malignant Republican politicians who want to install Christian fundamentalism in interpretations of scripture over the rule of law are not American patriots. You can buy the t-shirt online following the link at the American Atheist website.
Donna Piccoli of the blog News Is Out reports that she is pleased that autumn or fall has returned to the north of the United States. She writes that it's a welcome break after another scorcher of a year that is down to man-made global warming. Donna notes the crispness in the air is back and the leaves are already changing in Portland, Oregon, where I'm based. This Sunday marked the autumnal equinox, and after another scorching summer, I for one am welcoming the drizzle and chill. Fall is also a perfect time to check out and support queer-owned coffee shops or an LGBTQ film at a festival like Newfest or Relling. If you are in the Bay Area, it's also the 41st anniversary of San Francisco's leather-themed Folsom Street Fair. News Is Out goes on to list some of the United States' friendly LGBTQIA-operated coffee shops for people to browse and see if they are nearby. Pop along to their website to see if there are any near you.
Now, some exciting news from our friends in Surrey. A coalition of groups have come together to inaugurate Trans Pride Surrey, which is taking place this week, Saturday, 28th of September. This is the first such event for Surrey and will take place from 11:30 a.m. Meet at Upper High Street car park for a midday start, marching through town centre and then landing at Rosebery Park for speeches and a picnic. For more information, they are all on the social media channels and contact email is info@transpridesurrey.org.
In entertainment news, the lesbian icon, friendly television host Sue Perkins, is to temporarily join the staff of Britain's national commercial classical music network, Classic FM, in a four-part series called Race to Antarctica. Sue will take a musical expedition from the UK to the South Pole, exploring cities, countries and continents, whilst discovering classical music connections along the way. The series will air every Friday night at 8 p.m. Sue Perkins said, "I'm thrilled to be part of the Classic FM family and network and embark on this new series which perfectly combines two of my great passions, classical music and travel. I look forward to joining with Classic FM's well-travelled audience as we embark on this musical journey together." In the UK, Classic FM broadcasts on frequencies between 100 and 102 megahertz FM, in Bristol the outlet being 101.4. The station is also on digital TV services and digital DAB radio. And finally, something a bit saucy. Gay arts blog Queer Guru reports on a piece of naval history being turned into a celebratory work of musical theatre. Most gay men in the Western Hemisphere under the age of 50 have now never had to experience life when it was still illegal to be a gay man. Queer Guru notes that those of us who may predate all of that era will remember how low the authorities would sink to actually entrap anyone they suspected of being gay and throwing the full force of the law at them. The scary part is that the harassment of gay men literally goes back hundreds of years. There was a major incident in the US known as the Newport Navy sex scandal in 1919. A mid-level Navy official in Newport named Irvin Arnold learned that some sailors stationed there were meeting up to have sex with other sailors and civilians. Arnold made it his personal mission to root out homosexuality in the Navy, and this culminated in 3 weeks of military trials, with some sailors sent to prison on charges of sodomy and scandalous conduct. The incidents became nationally infamous, not just because there were sailors having sex with each other, but also the investigative methods which involved sending sailors out to seduce other sailors and entrapping them. The new musical brings a theatrical gay brush to the story, as Matthew Lawrence and Jason Fakinder bring the show to the big stage. Matthew Lawrence told Queer Guru, "This project is very special to us, and we hope that this piece of queer US history will allow attendees to consider some weighty topics that are as relevant today as they were back in 1919. His co-creator Jason added, "We began researching the scandal in 2019 and have spent several years developing the material through workshops, lectures and performances. Much of Scandalous Conduct," because that's what they've called the play, "was filmed inside the meeting house itself to draw parallels between the events there and what viewers will be seeing today. Scandalous Conduct is showing at the Friends Meeting House, Newport, Rhode Island, until October the 6th. Now, remember to keep up with all the latest LGBTQIA news in your area by staying in tune with community broadcasting stations in your neck of the woods. And why not check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Lisa Loader.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Gay men having sex with each other, whatever next?
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Nice Callum Scott one, that. That's a Roots. Quite liking these works. Nice, I've had quite a few of these songs on recently.
It's giving a very a woofy vibe. Yeah, I mean, that kind of
makes you want to shout Roots really loudly, doesn't it?
No.
Okay.
It's going to be an autumn party anthem, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a very, very good artist.
Yeah, it's a cute one. It's a nice one to enter autumn with, I think.
I think so too.
But it's a very Shawn Mendes kind of vibey song, isn't it?
I just agree, yeah. I have no idea what Shawn
Mendes is. Shawn Mendes.
I'm in the wrong case with you. You know who Shawn Mendes is.
Yeah, I do. I'll take it the Mickey. Hey. I'm not as au fait as I once was. Back in my 20s when I was DJing in clubs.
Oh, everywhere, like, yeah.
Obviously, you still use au fait as a word.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with the word au fait.
I've never heard anyone my generation use it. So
No. Not cultured enough.
Aware of, God, yes. Sorry,
yeah, well, I could say au fait, yeah, aware.
I kind of like it. I might use it now. Yeah. I'm okay. Okay, but I'm excited about this next guest that we have on. It's Louise. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
This is so lovely to be here, so thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's after like a good long month of promoting your debut director film.
I know, and literally it's like a few days away and it's just, it feels really surreal, but I'm also stepping into this chapter being like, do you know what, let me own this for everything that it is, because I've worked so hard to get to here and now I get to enjoy like sharing it out to people.
Yeah, you got to remember
people.
To actually enjoy the day.
Yeah.
Like, it's such beautiful work. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, what kind of made you, I guess, get into directing at start? Let's start there and then like talk about going to the story.
Yeah, so funnily enough, I had never done filmmaking before in my life, but I went to a program to get more black queer filmmakers into the industry, because it was is recognized that there is a lack of diversity in every single industry out there, and with the importance of having us tell our own stories and tell them authentically, because we are the best place to tell our stories. So I went along to it with very much of an open mind, but and I remember being like, well, I'm not a filmmaker, I'm a creative, I like telling stories, but I've never picked up a camera, I've never been on set, I don't know any of this stuff. But actually, it's just been really incredible to discover that my place is as a director. I love directing, I love bringing pieces together, bringing a team together, and also I love the journey of going from an idea to like a finished product. I think there's so much magic in that, and all the trials and tribulations that come along the way. So getting to like this weekend, I'm like, oh my god, I did it. Like, I did the thing that I thought was impossible.
How long has that journey been? When was it from when you first got into it to this coming up?
So it's been just over 2 years.
Wow.
Over this, yeah, 2 years. And it's been in and out, because obviously I'm not a full-time creative. I have a day job alongside, like many creatives. And so I've been doing it in and out of my job life, with like well-being, mental health happening. But it's always been the little shining light that's kept me, that I picked back up and been like, okay, now I've got some energy, let's get back in it. Where are we going? How is it going? Who do I need to connect with? So it's been the best.
But what was the moment that you realized you wanted to tell this story? Like, what was that like? And like, did you feel like something was speaking through you? Or did you feel like, I've just always wanted to, like you were uncovering something you've always wanted to tell?
I think I've always wanted to share my story in a certain way, but I think a lot of the time with stories from underrepresented groups, there isn't always that space or permission or feeling of permission to tell, even if you can tell your story, about telling it authentically without either filtering it, without making it to suit kind of like that global majority audience,
making it palatable,
making it acceptable, being very diplomatic when people ask you about your experience and stuff. So I think it's always been in me, but it's only through the last few years that I've been like, okay, what would it look like if I was to be in the driving seat of my own story for the first time? And then the creation of the documentary kind of evolved during those 2 years, because I evolved in those 2 years. And so it's normal that your art grows as you grow. And I think now I feel like in some ways I'm in my prime as a person, in my sense of self, and this is like the perfect time to be releasing this. And also standing up with your head high, because I think with these kind of things you have to be really bold and confident and being like, this is me, this is my story, and take it or leave it.
It's a power in saying take it or leave it, like, this is who I am, world. And what made you, I guess, pick, like, what was the kind of journey to picking who would feature on it? Like, what kind of resonated with you about like their stories, without giving too many spoilers away? We don't want that to happen, but
can we ask what the story's about?
I guess that's effectively like what that leads to. I know, so I'm ready.
It's called Speak Little One, The World Is Listening, which is a beautiful name.
Yeah.
It gives very little away.
I know, which I was a bit torn, isn't it? It's like, do you tell the whole thing? Do you give a snippet? But I think what I've learned over the last few years, especially with, I always like shout about therapy. Everyone should be in therapy. It's the best thing ever. You literally find so much about yourself. But through therapy, I've really discovered that your whole adult life is shaped because of everything that's happened to you in your childhood. And so a lot of the time, this documentary is specifically on the lived experience of adoptees. And a lot of the time I have found that if we don't really delve deeply in our childhood, in what's made us, then we actually can't understand why we are who we are and where we're going and why we respond in certain ways. So my vision with the documentary is really to be like, to really give like an authentic voice to our younger selves, to finally just be truly themselves without no one being like, oh, but you shouldn't feel like that, or you shouldn't think like that, or oh no, you can't say that because this adult in your life will get upset. Actually, just speak your truth, and your experience is your experience and no one can take that away from you. So I really just want us to all allow our younger selves to be heard finally, because I think I have experienced it directly that it literally changes everything in your life once you really nurture that younger self of you, of yours.
What's the most powerful thing about that? Like that, being able to tell that message though, because it is so, yeah, the adoptee story, I don't think it's one that I ever grew up knowing. So like, I guess why now do you think is a good time?
Gosh, why now for me? I think it's because I've gone through such a transformational journey with my own adoption and such a turmoil as well. And so now I've really come to the point of realizing that actually when you silence your own story, it actually destroys you. And so it's not about completely like, you know, destroying the whole world around you and being like, I don't care what you like, this is how I feel and I don't care what the consequences, but actually to really give space for all the messiness that you've gone through. And why is it the perfect time right now for me is because I think I've done a lot of work on myself to get to this space and to be able to do it safely, to do this documentary safely and to do it truthfully. And I feel now in a strong enough to kind of help, not help, it's wrong, but facilitate space for others to also, because it's a journey finding yourself to get to that place as well for themselves, to be, do you know what, like I am, like the like me today is perfect, and every single piece that's made me is
in the right place to get to have got me here. And that was, oh, that feeling.
Can I ask, did you have a bad experience for being, because I'm adopted myself. I was 2 weeks old when I was adopted. I
did not know that.
So my parents are not genetically my parents, they are my parents. But I can't remember any of it being bad. I've known since the day I can remember anything I was adopted, and I've had loads of questions like why, and why have my parents never come to me, but not something that I've ever felt affected me mentally. If anything, I was probably better off because I wasn't wanted by my original parents, and my parents who adopted me did so because they couldn't have kids. My mum had meningitis, which is why she was unable to conceive. It probably could by today's modern technology, we couldn't back then. But it wasn't something that ever hit me. So I'm curious what it is that was your experience that led to it being so much that you've made a documentary about it.
Yes, your story is really interesting. I have so many thoughts to respond, but I'm going to try and narrow it. That I think inherently adoption is traumatic, whatever angle you look at it, because at the end of the day you're looking at whatever age you lose your birth or genetic or whatever word you want to call it, kind of people that kind of gave birth to you and brought you into this world, it creates a sense of loss, it creates a sense of identity. For me personally, I lost my biological parents at the age of one, and so I don't have the kind of luxury that maybe some others do in terms of, like, you know, when you do like retracing your roots and like the whole DNA test. And I think those things may not be seen as important, but it is actually the root of sense of self. And so I think it's not, this documentary isn't to say that everyone has a bad experience per se, but it is about that there's not enough conversations about the nuances of adoption and identity and sense of self and belonging. And maybe controversially, I think individuals who feel like, oh, well, I feel I had a really lovely time, and it's not dismissing they had a lovely time, but I think there's so many deep so many deep kind of conversations with adoption that is, the society doesn't really give itself to allow you to even think about them, to even think that they're a thing. So I think
my parents were very open.
But I think, Andy, what we've got to understand is obviously adoption happens on many lines, and I'm really glad that you had your story. But then when race is played into it, also nationality is played into it, when there's multiple, not just race, there's many different other like factors that are played into it. I think it then becomes a lot harder, because you, what your sense of self is dictated by the people that have birthed you. And if you don't have that connection, that, I don't know, that must be so hard. Is that kind of presented in this kind of, or is it just about their kind of, yeah, kind of, what kind of stories are they kind of telling in the book,
in the documentary? They've got I was lucky enough to work with two of my friends I've met throughout my life, and one of them's my old lecturer at UW Bristol, the way I studied what feels like many moons ago. But she was adopted during the 1950s when, if you're a single mother, you had to give up your child.
Which is a terrible thing. It's been all over the news.
Hugely over the news. And then the other adoptee is Grace, and she was adopted during the one-child policy rule in China. And so both of those are quite significant moments in history, per se, actually. Not per se, like actually. And a lot of the time you think of those moments, and I was adopted during, just before the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. So those are all really big, like, moments in history that adoption occurs for. Obviously, if those can be seen, that if those children weren't adopted at that time, where would they be now? But there's no way for us to know where either of us would be if we weren't adopted,
and it's something you never stop thinking about.
But I think a lot of the time with these big life events or like kind of tragedies in history, you hardly ever think about, okay, so in 30 40 50 years time, what happens to that orphan that started at the beginning? And so I think with adoption, a lot of the time the focus is so much on, you know, the adoptive parents that go through the adoption journey, they adopt the child, their journey and things like that, but not always, I find, in terms of that continuous conversation about how that impacts you as you grow up. And kind of a lot of the time it's seen that once that child gets adopted, then that is their forever family, which in legal terms, yes, but I think sometimes in emotional terms can look like a very different thing. And that's where, for me, goes into like identity, belonging, connection, genetics, DNA.
We're also very good at, you know, extending our family with friends and the like, too. So listen, we're rapidly running out of time. Yeah.
Just one more question, please. What would you say to other like black and queer filmmakers that really want to do what you've done and like are scared to take of a leap? Like, what would you say?
Gosh, I was terrified myself, because I was like, what do I know about this? I was just like enthusiastic and keen. But I would say, and this is me saying this now in this point of my journey, if you asked me a year's time, I would have been like, oh, I don't know. But I would say just go for it, because the first step is the most important one. And then once you go for it, to not give up, to like utilize your network, because your story needs to be told. It doesn't always have to be your story as a black queer individual, but like pulling into the richness of your own story or the communities around you serves a really important purpose. So just to go for it. You can't regret it, because I don't regret it. I think it's been like one of the best things I've done with my life.
I cannot wait.
When's it screening and where?
It's screening this Saturday at Watershed at 1 o'clock. And there's only a few tickets left, and it's gonna be incredible. Yeah. Brilliant. So basically sold out screening.
Well, yes. Are you gonna put on more then?
So yeah, fun, which is very exciting. After this is the big debut, because obviously I've grown up in Bristol, I'm a trustee of Watershed, so it made sense to start here. But then afterwards I'm going to take it on tour into different cities, because I think it's so important to continue the conversation and to see where it goes. So I'm excited. So this is the beginning of many more films.
Of your brilliance.
We're big fans of the Watershed. They won an award, do you remember?
Yeah,
they did. You presented it, I think. I don't think it was yourself that came and received it. I can't remember now.
I was there when they won. They're great. I have so much love for them. So it's just, it makes sense for me to post it there.
Well, if it's selling well, it sounds like it's already a success. I was going to say best of luck for it, but it sounds like it's going to be amazing.
But if you are in Bristol, you can go and get tickets. Go and get tickets. Yes, there's a few left. Go and support. Yes. Like, you know, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait.
Are you talking afterwards? Are they talk you into doing that? Or is that a bit too nerve-wracking?
No, so I'm going to be giving an introduction at the beginning, and then the film, and then then we're going to have a Q&A with the other adoptees. So I'm going to be, there's going to be conversations. I think it's not enough just to show a film, because I think people, you show a film, the lights go back on and everyone goes back to their lives. And I think there's richness in extending that and pulling on the themes and things. So it's going to be amazing.
Well, you have to stay in touch, because it sounds like, given the passion you've had with this one, I have a funny feeling this might not be the last one.
It's not going to be the last one at all.
You'll have to let us know how you get on. But in the meantime, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And I will let you go, and best of luck for Saturday.
Thank you.
Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
There you go. That was Thunder by Imagine Dragons.
That made me booty shake, you know.
Did
like
it?
A little bop, bop, little bop up and down, you know.
A little bit of twerking.
Yeah, Terry. The buttocks was moving.
If I twerk, go too low, I can't get back up again. That's the problem.
I mean, twerking, yes, you can do it in your seat. You just booty pop. Do you know what I mean? Lift their helvis and throw it back.
Lessons with Lara.
Yeah, literally. I should do a little class.
One of our fellow radio stations down in Dorset, which serves an older community, they do every day at 9:20 they do armchair exercises.
I love
people, especially people in care homes.
We should not forget older people.
Absolutely, we should.
It's not really a subject we've done much on, but we should really.
Actually,
I know there is an LGBT care home, I think it's up Manchester way.
Yeah, there is, isn't there? Yeah. And there's several in the United States. And I was saying to Lisa,
if anyone wants to sponsor us to go up to Manchester, archive some, you know, radio stuff,
that would be good.
But it is an interesting one, because we're most of us are in the generation, perhaps not yourself, Laura, we're in a generation where, you know, I remember the days when the gay scene was literally the gay scene. You could actually exclude heterosexual people because it was known as a protected space, whereas of course a lot of the clubs these days are very mixed, very open, and the like. So there is going to be a few generations that really kind of will feel safer to have that separation when they're older, but then will it disappear? Yeah. Whereas the younger generations come through, they've experienced more equality. I don't know.
To be fair,
completely separate subject from what we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
but
let's not get me down. But like in general, though, like we don't want segregation. The whole point is integration, isn't it?
I
know having protected space is important, but it is division, and we're still self organized,
totally,
don't
that.
We? In the LGBT,
but someone who's 60 at the moment, who grew up with that homophobia might not feel very safe in a heterosexual environment. When they've spent their whole life totally separate from it and had to hide it for decades because it was so illegal. You know, they're the kind of people who may for a while.
I say that actually, you're right actually, because when OMG started to open it up to more than just, it felt like the community, it was hard to accept because it's like, well, this is the only place that I know I can feel like that. I know most people around me are like me, whereas now it's like I have no idea, you know. And so I do understand what you're saying.
I remember the days if you walked up to a straight bloke and you said, "Hey mate, can I buy you a pint?" If he was straight, he'd punch you in the face.
Right. Okay.
Nowadays, if you don't say you like them, they're like, "What's wrong with me?"
Literally. Look at me, darling.
totally changed. And it's changing in a good way. But what we're talking about is an older generation. And you know, we don't know the answer. We'll have to do some research, talk to them. If you are in that generation and you're going into get in contact, we'd absolutely love to talk to you about it, especially if you're already in a care home, we can come out to you, etc. Just get someone to ping us a message either on the socials or studio at shoutoutradio.lgbt so you can get hold of
us. Or you can write us a letter.
Yes,
BCFM Eastern Community Centre.
Pen and paper.
Kilburn's.
Community, like you said, chosen family earlier. Like, if you don't have that chosen family,
I'm not sure I want to live with them, though.
You don't have to live with them. What I'm saying is, it's not even just, even if you had lived in an assisted care, you still want a social life. You still want people to come visit you. And that's the element also that's important.
In this country, we chuck them in an old folks home.
I know.
And we chuck, and they're hidden. They're not integrated into the country.
No.
And I think that's where...
And that's the main problem.
Europeans get it much better than we do, especially in Southern Europe, the French and the Italians and the Spanish. I mean, old people are senior citizens.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, I mean, people slag off the Americans for their politically correct language, but senior citizen is... the term it should be in my book, not old age pensioners.
No.
They are senior citizens and have such great skills to offer all of us, you know, when we talk to older people.
If we had that community vibe, it wouldn't be that, like, you know, I would necessarily, it would be like my kids would come and look after you. Do you know what I mean? Because I told them that you're, do you know what I mean? That's what community does. It's like you send your kids to go and help the person on the street, because they, I know we've had such a distrust in our society now that we don't want to do that, but that's why I want to get back to that, because it's, I want to grow up in that. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
the
next question down is a very valid one, because that talks about, you know, is it true your friendship groups that LGBT QIA plus people have less social support, as is argued in the report? The one thing that's always felt wonderful about the LGBT plus community is you do feel that sense of community.
Yes.
I've even jokingly had conversations with a friend of mine who is straight, white, heterosexual, and he's like, even my wife has got like a girls' club she goes to, and I'm like, I'm sure you could go join like a motorbike club or something. He's like, yeah, but it's not quite the same. You talk about the LGBT community, and it's like the minute you meet someone else, they're automatically part of your community,
right?
And you know, it's like, and it's one of the things I've always loved is the way, not everyone, but for the most part, you look at things like Pride, we're a big bunch of supportive people.
That's,
you
know, true. That's,
I think, true. Though, do we just show up for each other's in the good times, though? Are we hard time riders?
Well,
and that's the thing. It's like, then it becomes like, what are you pouring into, and what who's pouring into you? I think it's a hard one, because I don't think we actually are as supportive in the bad times as a community as we are when we're partying and having fun and sharing joy. Protesting also we're brilliant at, but I'm just saying, it's in like, we don't have systems in place to like to look after our elderly, that's, you know, LGBT people, that can keep that culture.
When did you see some older person in a club or out in a social event? You know,
I'm not sure. Pride, not sure all example, want Pride. To go. Well, I've seen them at Pride.
There are a few. I mean, I'm just thinking of Bristol. You know, when we go to the old Castle Green, the old Market Tavern, Bristol Bear Bar, there are older people there.
Yeah,
and that is
in
nice
Bath.
To see.
There's a social group that has coffee mornings and like, isn't
Gay
there?
West, Gay West, the oldest, it. The oldest LGBT group, so they claim, in the country, 1972. And they meet at the St Michael's Coffee Centre, which is owned by Age Concern, or Age UK as it is now. And they have members up to their 90s. I think Ernie is in his 90s. God bless him.
So there are some. I mean, I can't speak for everyone else's circles of friends, but a lot of our friendships are, as you'd expect, gay and male. And to a point 20 years ago, I'm like, really need to get some female friends. You know,
really?
genuinely, I suddenly realised that everyone in my life was pretty much a gay man. You know, very different now in my 40s. But in our circle of friends, we do support each other through the good and the bad. You know, I've had, you know, some horrific things happen, so it's not my place to say, especially not on the radio. But, you know, and you're there for those, as well as let's have a party and get drunk because it's New Year's Eve and like. So, you know, I don't know if I'm just lucky.
I was wrong. We do that, but I'm all talking about like, whilst they wipe your like bum when you're like, you know, that kind of care.
Yeah,
like, when I get to that age, I'll find out,
I guess.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying just our community, it's just as a community in general, we're not really used to taking care of our elderly, like, within families. Like, we're like, again, like, they
well,
are.
That's
and,
the thing, isn't
and that's,
it?
Like, that's what, that's the appreciation. Yeah. Like, I do not see the mirroring between life, and like, I just wish we were able to appreciate that more.
See, there is a precedence for that level of care during the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
Obviously that generation is growing up and to an extent not with us anymore, and obviously a lot of people died during the crisis, but lots of, you know, lesbian women in particular came in to the AIDS activist groups and were looking after gay men. They'd had experience of feminism in the 70s and that self-organisation, and they brought that to it. And there was really deep compassion. And a lot of younger gay men, as a rite of passage, would go and look after, you know, older guys that were living with HIV.
Yeah.
So there is that precedence that we can draw on, hopefully.
Yeah. We just need more examples of good. And I liked your third question, is like, is there something better like that can be done? And yeah, so did any of you have any ideas of like what kind of, like, maybe one thing, because we're running out of time, but like, we're okay. But yeah, like, is there anything you would want from...
But I think we have to change the way we live in the country, full stop.
100%.
Sorry.
No, no.
It's, I think it's a pretty fundamental part of the UK.
In what way do you think, though, within this framework, what way?
I don't like the feeling that you get to a certain age and you just get shoved out of the way in a home.
But
suddenly, yeah, you're not. I'm not speaking from experience, though. So it's just it's just my interpretation of how it feels. It's like they hit so that, and you
what, you become inconvenient.
Well, I don't know if it's an inconvenience. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like, you know, certainly in the LGBT community, they're far less visible. But is that just because I'm not that age and not interacting? And
that's what I'm saying. It depends on where we create a sense of belonging. For example, if, do you know when you do plus, the clubs could do plus 50 nights, where it's just, you know, only 50-year-old LGBT plus people.
They'd be done by our plus 10.
Yeah, but that's okay. No, but that's okay. Cool. But that's okay. But that's the thing. It's not, I'm not saying a woo 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 club night. No, I'm just saying that you're sharing a music event. And there's no events that go over 50s, like come together, talk about being LGBT plus and like chill. There's nothing like that. And that's the problem. There's no spaces for us to come and meet. So like, you're right. We have to change the way we actually fundamentally do things.
Yeah. I mean, but there are a lot of things to do cross over. I don't know, perhaps, if clubbing's the best example.
Not clubbing, I mean, you know, like, isn't like music events. Like, when, like, music events, like, you have, like, in clubs, like, plus 30s, why can't we have events that is just, like, between certain ages, yeah, where people can, like, meet up and, like, join it? Because you need to, every so often, you need a refreshing in your friendship group, in your, like, because people go off and, so, like, actually having more spaces that we can, what, later life, we can form communities as we go, get older. That, to me, seems like a first step in actually bringing us more together. But I don't know, like, it's a bit, I feel like I live in the idealistic, because it feels like you complain and then nothing happens because it needs money.
I just don't know. For me personally, I don't know that music would be the thing, because the music that I would want to listen to would be very different to what someone in their 20s would want to listen to.
Oh, no, I'm not saying combine them. I'm saying have a soul event for, like, over 50s.
But even then, it would be a very different thing, because they're not going to want the banging club type thing, really, really loud, where you can hardly hear yourself think, you know. I mean, I used to love that. I was a DJ. Less so these days.
Yeah.
My friend Bob does artists in residence in old people's homes, and I thought that I think maybe somehow we can incorporate that, or it could be made as part of the LGBTQIA plus scene as well. It's just such a good idea. So he'll go into old people's homes and talk about make a documentary on stories of their hands, what their hands have done, their favorite songs. That's and then cool. At the end, they might do a choir sing-along, and they might he'll have a film that he'll show them as a group. And I think that
that's
makes
beautiful.
People feel more vital.
Yeah, I wanted to do, like, going to, because I work with young kids, I wanted to do, like, at-home science experiments with older, like, people. So, like, do you know how you can do, like, cook together? I wanted to do, like, let's do science together. So, like, they go in and, like, they have to, like, either they're delivering it to the older generation and they're following along, or they're, like, together and someone, there's an instructor. But, like, having stuff where, like, they're realizing they're, like, you know, they're not so dissimilar. They're just older. You know?
Although it can also be very fun to put the two opposite ends of the generations together to discuss things. There is still on our website a Shout Out After Dark where we did just that, where we put
different generations,
two different generations, and they were talking about things like Nigel, who was the older chap, was talking about in his day, A, because it was illegal, and B, because the internet didn't exist, when you wanted to advertise that you were a gay man looking for another gay man, you did it in the Bikers magazine. It was all by codes. It had different initials. And they're like,
magazine called Exchange.
Whereas these days it's Grindr.
I think some communities do it better than others. I'm just thinking our colleague here at BCFM, DJ Nitro, runs an internet radio station called Crystal Love Radio, which is for the older Caribbean listener. And there is a movement in the Caribbean communities, in the diaspora in Britain, of no, we're going to have a mature dance, goddammit. You have to be 50 to get in. Look smart, look nice, look your best, and dance to those 70s funk tunes and everything.
That's what I mean. I think that
we can learn a great deal from that.
Next year, shout-out's 15. If we keep going till we're 50, 60, 70, you know, we'll be doing that too, I would imagine.
Maybe, why not?
So, yeah, it's an interesting subject, isn't it? You know,
It is.
Yeah,
I'm really glad you brought it up, actually, Terry. I think it's a really good section to talk about, because I would love to see if we could do a show on that or something like that, you know, like we'll where we can bring them together.
We can find some LGBT people who
I'm sure there's lots of people listening.
Hello, if you are lovely to have you listening
as well.
I'm going to give you a bit of a reminder. Next week we are an hour later if you're listening to us live. We go out live on BCFM and a couple of others. We'll be starting FM, at 8 o'clock, not the usual 7 o'clock.
It's permanent, so
we will be at 8 o'clock from next week. But that's it for this show. Shout out, as I said, it's moving to 8 o'clock next week. I should have remembered I put that in the blooming script.
Same show, same stations, available on podcast too. Check out our website for more shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week we're catching up with the Diversity Trust, which will be fun. From myself, from Terry, from Lisa, from Tara, and from Lara.
Bye,
everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Lullaby.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.